This is Indian Noir, India's most critically acclaimed storytelling podcast. His Night Begins, Season 4, Episode 11. The village of Matharu was located some 100 kilometers from IP City. It was a cluster of aging wooden buildings, crisscrossed by alleyways. It was set on a slight incline that led up to a dense bamboo forest. There was a fast-flowing creek at the bottom of the village. Wooden bridges, direly in need of maintenance, was placed at multiple sections. It helped the villagers access several pathways that snaked up to Highway 89 and civilization. The village was also flanked by muddy terraces, featuring uneven tracks that led to the dense forest beyond. J.B. and his men observed the village from a hilltop with their high-powered binoculars.
"The house with the red roof,"
one of his men said. J.B. responded, glancing the section where the two-story house rose up next to a crooked metal post on which a jumble of electrical cabling nested messily. It was 6 a.m. and the village was just waking up to the blood-red sky in the east. Some of the men in J.B.'s team shivered and cursed as a cold morning chill cut through their bag of bones.
"Here are the photos from the surveillance,"
the man who had spoken before said, handing over a stack of black and white snaps. J.B. inspected them. Anger raged in him as he spotted members of the Mexican kill team in the house, wandering around the village or making purchases at the local grocer. He returned the photographs and glanced the house again. There was movement at the window. He placed the binoculars on the roof of his utility vehicle, pulled out his mobile phone and messaged Guruji. "They are here. Today is the day." SP Vinay Prasad stared at the grandfather clock in her apartment, as if she was expecting time to speed up through sheer force of her will. The austere furnishings in the apartment, the smattering of family photos on the wall, even the current affairs magazines on the coffee table thrummed with expectation. The tick-tick of the clock mechanism seemed louder than usual. Vinaya looked at the photo of her departed parents. It was taken during their honeymoon in Shimla. She took in their youthful smiles. She wondered how they would have responded to her present anxiety.
"Beta, everything will be fine. What's important is that you have prepared for the best and planned for the worst,"
she could hear her father say.
"Yes, father,"
she said to the empty apartment, draped in shadows. She had closed the curtains to enhance the solitude and peace. Every bit helped when it came to calming her nerves. Her thoughts drifted to Guruji.
"He better deliver," she thought angrily. "That wretched man better deliver."
She slammed a closed fist on the armrest of her chair. It was just her in this apartment. It always had been, since her parents had left her to navigate the troubles of the world on her own. There were the occasional lovers who stayed over, but most of the time, it was just her. She was content with the way things were within the four walls of her home. But when she stepped out of the ascetic's cave, there was no room for professional failures. She expected nothing less than perfection. She couldn't control the outcome of what was going down in Matharu, and it bothered her to no end. Nask Q, she was sharp. She would keep the old man on track. No sooner had she considered this thought, her phone buzzed. It was Guruji.
"We are here. It won't be long now,"
the message read.
While Guruji spoke with Jai Bhim, as he observed the village of Matharu through his binoculars, Anas performed her pre-job ritual. A habit that she had adhered to for nearly a decade now. She pulled out a faded photo of her beloved Jaslin and said a prayer for her departed soul. Jaslin, in her mid-20s, showing off her punk motorcycle fashion proudly as she sucked on a cigar. Frozen forever in time with the rebellious streak that still shone brightly after all these years. They had taken the photo at a nightclub near Connaught Place. A long time ago, a gang of vicious men had gang-raped Naz, and instead of punishing them, society had forced her into an asylum. Naz had met Jaslin in those cold corridors where she thought her life would end. But they fell in love. They escaped. And together, they wreaked holy revenge on those who had wronged Naz. Sadly, Jaslin perished in the campaign, leaving Naz with a hole in her heart that could never be filled. A powerful breeze stirred a susurration of leaves in the bamboo forests nearby. "You have come to say hello, as always, haven't you, darling?" Naz Q said, tearing her tearful eyes away from the photograph. She watched the rustling leaves as she tried to remember her lover's soft touch. "Maybe today's the day I get to come back to you, to your grace," Naz said before kissing the photograph and placing it back in its usual resting place. She continued watching the bamboo trees swaying in the wind.
"Our chariots are ready," she heard Guruji say.
Naz snapped around to find two long carts topped with bamboo sticks. There was a section underneath the cart, covered with woolen blankets. A hidden compartment. This was their Trojan horse. This was how they were going to infiltrate the village. "A chariot indeed," she said to Guruji, who stood next to a beaming Jai Bhim who looked proud as punch. Ramirez, the tallest of the three soldiers in the kill team, was on guard duty. Jose, the wiry one, sat at the makeshift table beside their leader, Alberto Salazar. He was struggling with his breakfast.
"These pendejos don't know how to make tortillas,"
Jose said, raking the black bean curry with his bread.
"I was happy to make it for you, but you insisted on trying the local delicacies,"
Ramirez responded, still glassing the alleyways of Matharu, the village they camped in as they continued their hit-and-run operations in IP City. Every 10 days they would venture out and wreak havoc on their enemies in the city before shifting to a new village to eliminate any chances of being tracked. So far, no one had managed to tail them and discover their hideouts, which were strategically located villages or small towns where people were happy to take the cash and mind their own business. Alberto, the man who had slain Nilesh, was peeling an apple as he watched Ramirez glass the streets. He saw his subordinate's furrowed forehead and immediately asked,
"What's wrong?"
"Bamboo traders," he responded. "Carts loaded with their goods, making their way uphill.
Bamboo cultivation, processing, and a trade in products made from them was the chief source of revenue for the villagers.
There is an animated conversation between that puta madre shopkeeper with the red turban who reeks like a fish, and one of the traders. Wonder what it's about," Ramirez said.
"Keep an eye on it for now,"
Alberto said before biting into the apple. Alberto thoroughly enjoyed killing the Dawn of IP City and his family. This was the kind of gold standard operation that could set his independent security business up for decades. But before he got too excited about the future, he still had a job to complete. The final dregs of an empire that needed to be mopped up.
"Total annihilation," the Mortifagos leader had demanded of him.
His patron, Miguel Beltran Fuentes, had rewarded him amply for the recent strike that killed scores of policemen and Nilesh's precious scalp. But just as the sea was a treacherous mistress, the man's mood could change and he might find himself at the receiving end of his wrath. Alberto was not the kind of man who felt fear.
but the thought of being at the receiving end of Miguel's psychopathic outbursts made him uncomfortable. It was important that he finished the whole mission to the drug lord's satisfaction, and that meant steering clear of trouble between each major operation. It also meant Jaib Heem and his mongrel gang had to sleep in the bottom of the ocean.
Seems fine. Looks like they were negotiating on where to store the bamboo and at what price.
That stinky cabron would have asked for an arm and a leg, Ramirez said.
Keep an eye on them, Alberto said.
Jose and Ramirez had served him ably for the last 8 years, since leaving the army to take up lucrative contracts offered up by Don Ernesto Fuentes. The men were like his brothers in the Special Forces unit, and he had brought them in with minimal persuasion when he switched sides. Both men worked hard for their money, but most importantly, they would give up their lives for each other. You could never put a price on such loyalty. Alberto was godfather to their children, and it was his duty to keep them safe on the missions by planning for all eventualities. Presently, Alberto approached the window where Ramirez was stationed and examined the scene before him. The traders were pushing the loaded carts up the steep road that wound its way around a block of shanty homes before ending up at the furniture factory.
Poor sods. Doesn't look like fun, Ramirez said.
They should have gotten into our business, Alberto chuckled.
They can't even make tortillas for shit. What good would they do with guns?
Jose said, eliciting a bout of laughter from his comrades.
Wait, Ramirez suddenly said. I have seen one of the guys pushing that cart somewhere.
Where?
Alberto demanded.
When we were tailing Jaib Heem, he said.
When the carts were close enough to the target home, at a distance where prying eyes couldn't discover them from the windows, Naz and Guruji emerged from the covers in the bottom compartment. They rolled out of the undercarriages and bear-crawled their way towards the front wall of the home. They stood up with their backs against it. They then crab-walked sideways till they were on both sides of the main door, Guruji on the left and Naz on the right. There were no exits behind or on the left side of the home. The right wall of the house featured a tall barn door that were in the sights of Jaib Heem's rifle-toting men. More gang members had been tasked with keeping their eyes on the first-story windows. Jaib Heem's underlings were also stationed at strategic locations across the town to trap the members of the kill team should they escape Guruji and Naz's surprise attack. Therefore, the two hired killers felt confident that no matter what, their enemies would be in body bags by the end of the day. Guruji and Naz both held their favorite handguns. In addition to her weapon, Naz wore a bandolier with three grenades nestling in secure pouches.
You ready?
Guruji mouthed, silently. Naz ran a free hand down her white t-shirt and jeans before nodding her assent.
Thanks for listening to Indian Noir. Click the follow button. You can also take a sneak peek at how the show is produced and my life and my interests via my social media channels. I am at Indian Noir on Instagram and Twitter.